Hello, this is Anil Kumar and welcome to Back to the Bible radio broadcast. During today's program, we continue the part 3 of our series on life lessons from David, the man who would be king, with Dr. John Neufeld. Today, we will explore a message about understanding what ultimately matters. So turn with me to our text in 1 Samuel chapter 28.
None of us can live lives of significance until we get a grasp of what ultimately matters. Some of us assume that fame or success in a given field of endeavor brings significance to our lives, or that peace and security and a sense of being fulfilled ultimately matter. Some of us believe that if we fulfill our deepest desires, that's what life is for. And so we give ourselves to what we believe is significant, and because these things can become our gods and our goddesses. Our lives are reduced to the chasing of dreams that, even if we are to achieve them, will die with us as well. To live for these things is the same as the man or woman who lives an empty life with no goals or achievements at all. For as Solomon would say in Ecclesiastes 9:4, a living dog is more valuable than a dead lion. And once death has claimed us, all our deepest longings perish with us. And if you were a lion, your death will signify that the next generation of dogs have won over on you. 1 Samuel 28 is a chapter of the Bible that focuses us to think of what ultimately matters, what real significance looks like, and what it means to live a life of purpose, a purpose that endures. The chapter opens with the events in David's life that are reaching a climax. Verse 1 says, "In those days the Philistines gathered their forces for war to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, 'Understand that you and your men are to go with me in the army.' David said to Achish, 'Very well, you will know what your servant can do.' And Achish said to David, 'Very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life.' And so a great drama is enacted. We will remember that David, in fear for his life, has gone over to the Philistines and has come under the protection of King Achish, the king of one of the Philistine royal cities, that is, the city of Gath. And now the war has started, and David is expected to fight for the Philistines against Israel. The next chapter will pick this up, but the reader might well ask here, what will David do? Will he actually fight with the Philistines, or does he have in mind to turn and murder Achish and fight against the Philistines in the heat of battle? What will he do? Well, stay tuned. We're going to deal with that tomorrow. And as this drama of a great war with Israel is about to ensue, the Bible tells us of another piece of information. Verse 3 simply says that Samuel had died and all Israel had mourned for him and that he was buried in Ramah. Now, we're already told of this back in chapter 25, but it's repeated here so that the reader, that is, we, will not fail to appreciate that Samuel is dead and he's buried and that the period of mourning is now long past. And so these two things make the background of our account. A war is brewing, and David will have to put his life on the line if he is to stand with the people of God. And Samuel is long dead. And with that, Samuel and David are swept from the picture and are not the focus of this chapter. Instead, the scene changes and the chapter focuses on Saul, the king of Israel. We begin by noticing where the troops are lined up. The Philistines have set up their camp and military fortifications at Shunem, and Israel is facing them at a place called Gilboa. Now, Gilboa has a mountain, and it would be an excellent place for Saul and the military leadership with him to survey the size of the Philistine army. They stand on a secure, elevated place and look down at the valley and get a sense of the size of their opposition. And to their alarm, the army is massive. One more thing needs to be added. The place where the battle was to be fought was on the plains of Jezreel, or what the book of Revelation later will call the Valley of Armageddon. Throughout biblical history, a great many decisive battles were fought there. Reading this account from a New Testament perspective gives the reader a sense of something ominous, something that signals the end of the age. And for Saul, this is the end of his age as king. This is the day of reckoning. But Saul is desperate. He senses utter ruin, and he is not ready for this. Verse 6 says, "And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by the prophets." That's a telling line. The Urim was some kind of a device, and we're not completely sure how it worked, but the priest used it to discern the will of the Lord. But as we remember, Saul had killed the priests at Nob, and in his defying of Samuel, Saul had also distanced himself from the prophets. He has no one left to tell him what God might be saying. He is now alienated from God. And then in verse 7, a verse upon which everything in Saul's life will now come to a climax, it simply says, "Then Saul said to his servants, 'Seek out for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her.'" Now, as we ponder his statement, we fast forward to the actual encounter of Saul and the witch of Endor, and we notice that Saul has disguised his appearance so that she will not know who he is. And in verse 9, we read, "The woman said to him, 'Surely you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the necromancers from the land. Why then are you laying a trap for my life to bring about my death?'" We have noted in our study of the life of David that the king of Israel was entrusted to carry out the commands of the law. At this period in Israel's history, his major role was to complete that which was left undone from the time of Joshua. He was to drive out all the nations that Moses had commanded to be driven out of the land. And one of the reasons for this is found in the end of the book of Joshua. If Joshua does not drive out the nations that lived in Canaan, then, according to Joshua 23 verses 12 and 13, these nations would become a trap and a snare for Israel, and eventually Israel would be enticed into idolatry from these nations. And this would bring the wrath of God upon them. And so one of Saul's jobs was that he was to lead the battle against idol worship. He was to end it. Indeed, when we read Deuteronomy 18, verses 10 to 12, we read, "There shall not be found among you anyone who burns his son or his daughter as an offering, anyone who practices divination or tells fortunes or interprets omens, or a sorcerer or a charmer or a medium or a necromancer or one who inquires of the dead. For whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord your God is driving them out before you." Now, while Samuel was alive, Saul had listened to Samuel's demands, and he was, in fact, enforcing God's commands. But now, in an hour of desperation, he is turning to the very evil that is communicating with the dead that God had so utterly and completely condemned. Compare David and Saul. David had been driven away from his inheritance in Israel by Saul, and yet refused to participate in pagan practices. Saul, on the other hand, lives in the Promised Land, and like David, was facing his greatest crisis, and turned to the very pagan practices that brought the anger of God upon the pagan nations that lived there in the first place. Now, before we go on, I want us to trace three stages of Saul's downward spiral. In his first great sin, he loses his dynasty, which was a severe blow. And in his second great sin, he loses the kingship, which is even more devastating. But in this third great sin, he loses his soul, not just the kingdom. And it is this: Saul, the damned human being, facing his own death at the hands of a massive Philistine army, that makes this chapter so foreboding, so frightening, so overwhelmingly solemn. But we might wonder, is Saul really damned here? In 2 Chronicles 33, King Manasseh, a man who seems so much more evil than Saul, repents and seems to find forgiveness and salvation. Why not Saul? Well, the answer is given in 1 Chronicles 10, 13 to 14. It says, "So Saul died for his breach of faith. He broke faith with the Lord in that he did not keep the command of the Lord and also consulted a medium seeking guidance. He did not seek guidance from the Lord." But we might protest, he tried to seek guidance, and God was not answering him. But Saul could have, at this moment, thrown himself unreservedly on the mercy of God, but he doesn't. And here's why. Saul thought his greatest problem was the Philistine battle line that he was facing, and not the fact that God was not speaking to him. And that, my dear listener, is a word for all of us. It's so easy to think that our greatest concerns are our health, or our finances, or our jobs, or our acceptance among our friends, or passing that exam that gets me into med school, or even finding significance in my life. But that is not our greatest problem, even in the least. Our greatest problem is God, and our relationship with Him, and the state of our eternal souls. Death, well, it might be avoided for the moment, but it is a fact. Whether you're ready for death or not, it is coming. Your issue is God. How sad it is when most of our prayers and our hopes and our dreams are taken up in the temporal, not in eternal matters. And for Saul, the reality of the Philistines and his need for supernatural help in this battle was a more pressing concern than the fact that God was not speaking to him. And in this, he was a fool. And all of us who think like Saul are fools as well. And when we come back, we will see that Saul gets a picture of a life beyond the grave and of the certainty of his imminent death and the consequences for his own sin. Join me as we come back.
As we near the climax of these life-altering events in David's life, it's interesting how the story now shifts to Saul and the choices he makes that will ultimately change the course of his destiny forever. From today's message so far, we are beginning to grasp the significance of knowing what really matters in life, in every human life. And that issue is what we do with God. When we come back, Dr. Neufeld wraps up this story to teach us what we must learn about the end of Saul's life. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. The Bible contains many passages about the topic of wisdom. Here are a few examples. James chapter 1 verse 5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him." Or how about Ecclesiastes chapter 7 verse 12 says, "For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it." Wisdom is a critically important issue for all believers to understand and apply it. Hopefully, you have had a chance to listen to Dr. Neufeld's recent series on the subject called Skillful Living, focusing on Proverbs, known as wisdom literature. We learned all about what it means to live a wise and godly life. This great series is available on CD for our valuable listeners. To receive it, call us at 9492-440070 or email at info@backtothebible.in.